The Bears get their Ben. A buck is staying that surprised everybody. The latest in Dallas plus, I don't know, an NFC championship game. We should probably talk about it. It's time for all that and more. It's time for Inside Coverage. She's Joy Epstein. He's Frank Schwab. I'm Jason Fitz. Welcome to Inside Coverage. I'll tell you now. I usually tell you at the end, but rate, review, subscribe. Hang out with us for the next hour. We're going to preview the NFC Championship game and get to all the coaching news. But in the meantime, tell your friends and family and everybody to hang out with us all the time. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's an exciting time, all right, for so many fan bases that suck right now. Jory, it's particularly exciting if you're a Chicago Bears fan because the Bears got their Ben. Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator that a year ago we thought was going to be Washington's coach, is now the Chicago Bears coach. I'll admit it, shed a little tear, had a little like solitary single tear, Jory. I thought he was going to be headed to my beloved Raiders. Not the case. The Bears get him. He talked to the world today. Your immediate thoughts on Ben Johnson to the Bears?
Yeah, kudos to the Bears for getting this done. I do think people wondered, hey, when you look at the front office dynamic, when you look at just the Bears franchise history and how many struggles they've had, would a coach like Ben Johnson, who had multiple options, want to go there? But ultimately, as Ben Johnson said in his introductory press conference on Wednesday, Caleb Williams was a huge factor in why he wanted to go there. I mean, there are so many teams around the league that have quarterback limitations. And Ben Johnson, who's very analytics and trend focused, said that when he looks at the analytics today, quarterback success is even more predictive of whether a team will win than the turnover ratio, which is a huge one in NFL circles. And I thought that was really interesting. So within the first 24 hours of signing his deal, he had already talked to Caleb Williams about some areas of the game that he thought Caleb could improve on from his rookie to sophomore year. And Ben ultimately said he felt aligned in Chicago. He felt like they had the right people in the building. And I don't know if we believe this, but he did say he felt like Chicago was a sleeping giant in the 2024 season that he's excited to wake up in 2025. So you make of that what you will.
I kind of agree. Like, they had to sell Caleb Williams hard in this search process because you can't really sell anything else about the organization, which has just become one of the worst in the NFL by far. Like, there's a reason they have not won a Super Bowl since the 1985 season. But look, I don't know if Ben Johnson's going to work out as an NFL head coach. We have no idea. It's a big step up from offensive coordinator, first-time head coach. But this was absolutely a worthwhile gamble to say, hey, we have a generational prospect, a quarterback who did struggle his rookie year with some things. He obviously showed some talent too, but we need to get the guy to get the most out of him. And we're going to gamble that that's Ben Johnson. And I respect the Bears for making this hire, getting it done, spent a lot of money, whatever they needed to do. Because again, you can't sell anything else. Ben Johnson could sit here and talk about, oh, we're all aligned on the same page. We all know that's not true. The Bears are a mess. And they have Caleb Williams, and they had a lot of money to throw around. And that's what ended up getting the job done against, you know, you're looking at, and we'll talk about, is going to come up again this episode, how bad these openings were. All these seven openings had just huge flaws to them. But I think that Ben Johnson looked around, looked at the landscape and said, well, the one thing here is Caleb Williams might be that dude. So kudos to the Bears for getting it done. And hopefully this brings something out of Caleb to get him to stardom, because the NFL is always better with superstar quarterbacks.
Can I ask you guys, though, I am so curious about this whole idea of, hey, we're the Bears. We're going to be so thorough, dig as deep as we can. And then, okay, we'll give you a super random candidate for a Rooney Rule, but then hire Ben Johnson without even bringing him in the building. Like, is that not strange to you guys? I understand that I'm saying this somewhat hypocritically. I took this Yahoo job without coming to interview in person. It was a lot of virtual conversations. But I just think it's like, so, to me, the fact that they did not meet in person before this deal was done suggests someone panicked. Maybe I'm being a little bit skeptical and cynical and all of those things because they got the information they each wanted. They've been thinking about this stuff for like a year. But I think either the Bears were like, here's a lot of money to come to us and not the Raiders or the Jaguars. Or Ben Johnson was just like, I need this job. I don't trust the other quarterbacks. Jared Goff just threw a lot of interceptions and I need someone with Caleb's arm talent as soon as possible. How do you guys read that?
I'll go quick on this. First of all, the Eddie George thing was gross. come on. Can we stop with this? Can we stop with just which coach is available so we can meet him in person for a couple hours and check that box? Like, this is not what the rule is intended to be. It's not helping anybody. They're making a sham and a joke out of it. And teams like the Patriots, who we've talked about, teams like the Bears, even if you have a candidate you like, you are making a mockery of this whole process and you should be fined. Like, this is ridiculous. And the NFL knows it. We all know it. Like, Eddie George came out of nowhere. And it was right after the Lions lost and Ben Johnson was available. Like, we all know what happened. And I just hate it. I just think it's ridiculous. And it needs to end. Something needs to happen because it's just getting worse and worse and worse. Now, with the not meeting him in person, I think that honestly, the interview process is a little overrated when it comes to these coaching hires. Like, I mean, you talked about, you know, taking the Yahoo job without meeting people in person. Well, Yahoo read your work. They knew you were a great writer. Same with Ben Johnson, where the Bears look at it and say, oh, do we need to really sit down with this guy for 12 hours and grill him? And no, we could just turn on the tape of pretty much any Lions game the last 2 years and see how good of a coach Ben Johnson is. So I think the interview process, he's going to get too caught up in that. Like, oh, he interviewed really well. All right, that's awesome. He can interview well. Can he coach a football team? Does he have the acumen to be X's and O's? So when I think of, you know, Ben Johnson not meeting with them in person, yeah, it's a little unusual, but I think Ben Johnson's resume was the Detroit Lions offense the last 2 years.
Can I be jaded here for a second, though? Like, in life, I think we chase our mistakes. So whatever mistake we make impacts the way we make future decisions. Let's acknowledge the fact that a year ago, he decided the Washington Commanders, with the new organizational structure, new people in the front office, new ownership, was not the right job. And that job had a clear path to the top overall pick, who was, or the number two overall pick, I should say, who was Jaden Daniels. He just got his ass kicked by that job and by Jaden Daniels. You want to tell me that doesn't play into some of the conversation here of looking at it and saying, man, I mean, I've talked to people, I'm far from an insider, but I've talked to people that I think are well-informed on the Raiders angle of this discussion and been told repeatedly that losing the way they lost to Jaden Daniels factored into some of his mindset. If I'm, at this point, Ben Johnson, I'm looking at it saying a year ago, I could have had Jaden Daniels if I was really passionate about it. I could have taken the Washington job, could have had Jaden Daniels, could have taken Washington job, could have taken, you know, any of these quarterbacks and had a situation. Instead, now you're stuck in this situation where you're looking around and saying, my God, now I got no quarterback, or I'm going to take Caleb Williams. I think last year, turning down the Washington job and then seeing it turn around has to play into his mindset at some level, doesn't it?
I think that's a good point. I think he also was very clear that, hey, we need to improve the offensive line for Caleb and we need to improve elements of this roster, even if they have weapons. And he said also, like, they've got a great defense, which not every team he was looking at necessarily did. Like, this is a defense who should take some pressure off the quarterbacks. I agree with you, Frank, that Ben Johnson had proven himself. But I still think if you're the Bears and you're saying we hired Shane Waldron not realizing there was some compatibility issues, and I don't think Shane Waldron's a bad coach. I think it was a bad marriage between him and the Bears and Caleb Williams. Then you should probably make sure that the marriage is a little more compatible the second time around, or obviously not the second, they've had more coaches. So that's, to me, just when I look at what the Bears have said in recent months, that we're going to dig deeper than we ever have before. There are going to be names that surprise you. We are going to make sure we're aligned. I just don't think their words and actions align. But ultimately, even if I have questions about the process, I think that they got the best option they could. And it was funny. I don't know if this is funny, but the more on the cynical front, we're getting cynical jewelry today. I texted an executive the other day about the Bears getting Ben Johnson. And I was like, is it not a little weird that they didn't bring him in for an interview? And they go, like, unless he's an axe murderer, he was by far their best option. And I was like, okay, but what if he was, just hypothetically? And the executive responded, then he better score 30 points a game. And, like, I'm not trying to make light of murder, but I do feel like that's so NFL. It's like, at this point, just score. We've seen, unfortunately, with coaches and players in this league, if you're good enough, we don't really care about some of the other things that we have to deal with in terms of baggage.
Joy, I hear all that. The only thing I would say, Frank, is, to me, like, part of this in person is making sure that everybody's on the same page. Like, I don't want to be flippant here. Ben Johnson could be the most qualified. And look, I would love for him to have been the head coach of my favorite football team. I think part of the in person process of this is you better make sure that he's on the same page with the people that are going to be picking his players. Like, one thing we've talked about ad nauseum at this point is that the Lions' synergy as an organization from their front office to their sidelines is a huge part of this. I guess they're relying on the fact that over a Zoom call that Ben has the sort of familiarity with that front office that seems, according to multiple people, to have a little bit of chaos and who's in control and what's it going to look like and what level of control. Like, we kept hearing Ben wanted to bring his people in. So, like, all of this is the moment that's a little head-scratching to me because, again, I think the Bears got the best name on the open market. You can't fault that. But you can have the best chef in the world, but you better make sure that whoever runs the restaurant's also picking the ingredients the chef wants to cook with if you want to have a great food establishment. But we don't know that in Chicago. So, all of this comes back to why it's more surprising to me that Ben Johnson didn't want to be there in person than that the Bears needed to see him in person.
I think that's all really fair. And one thing I just need to point out is we've talked about this already this offseason, many other offseasons. The process is bad. Like, the whole setup is so tough for these NFL teams and the coaches. Why did Ben Johnson get hired in this flurry all of a sudden with Eddie George getting a sham interview and we need to get Ben Johnson? It's because this is set up so where the Lions all of a sudden get upset in the playoffs. Are the Bears, like, you're right, in a perfect world, the Bears bring him in, they wine and dine, they're with him for 3 days, they figure out they're all on the same page. They didn't have that time. They got the Raiders to worry about and any other team. Everybody wanted Ben Johnson. Everybody knew Ben Johnson was kind of the white whale of this coaching cycle, maybe Mike Vrabel, but we all know everybody wanted Ben Johnson. Well, if you wait, if you say, we got to check these boxes to make sure he's been in our building for 3 days, well, the Raiders might hire him. They had to, and then this is set up to where it's not fair to teams in the playoffs, it's not fair to these assistants, and it's not fair to teams even chasing coaches, because look at what happened here where the Bears had to rush this along because all of a sudden the Lions get eliminated from the playoffs. The whole situation, the whole everything, the process of hiring coaches needs to change, where no interviews until like after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it definitely benefits teams that aren't in the playoffs also more than teams that are, and really no one is benefiting from it totally. I do agree this is a system thing. I think the way that I look at it though is, like, I'm in the stage of life where a lot of my friends are dating, engagement, marriage, some breakups, and what we always talk about is, what I always say is, when you're in a relationship and you're deciding whether to take that next step, whether that's forward or to get out, you should make the best decision with the information that you have at that time. And if the information changes, don't kick yourself about the decision that you made, because all you could do is make the decision with the best information you have. Like in marriage, you enter into engagement or marriage and you don't know everything that's going to happen. You can't anticipate it. So you just have to be comfortable with that. I don't believe the Bears made the decision with the best information available at the time, because I don't think that they sought all that best information and went through the thorough process. And maybe it's not going to matter and maybe it'll be fine. And I do understand that the system set it up of, like, oh, we feel like Tom Brady's in the wings just waiting to swoop in on this coach. Mm-hmm. But even if they had just flown him out Monday and met with him for 6 hours, I just feel like when we look at how often coaches fail in this league, and particularly with the Chicago Bears, who have not even been able to get a coordinator right, much less a head coach, I just feel like for both sides, if there's a little more information, a little more foundation you could create before getting him in the building, I think you should do that.
We're all saying the same thing. For anyone that, like, as we listen to this, we're all saying that we like this hire for Chicago, right? Like, I don't think anybody sitting here saying this is the wrong hire. I just think we're all a little bit it's such a different job. Now, he's going to call plays, which, again, first-time head coach, he's going to call plays. I don't think any of us are surprised by that, but I'm going to be that guy that constantly reminds you it's such a different job and you're going to be calling plays all at the same time. That's a lot to put on his plate. It's one of the reasons that I personally get really nervous when I see first-time head coaches, because trying to figure out where the balance is between being there for everybody and calling plays. So he's going to be in charge of developing Caleb. He's going to be in charge of calling plays. He's going to be in charge of running the locker room. He's going to be in charge of being everything that head coach can be all at once. That's a lot, Jory. I just think we need to at least take a second and acknowledge that each of those is its own full-time job, and he's taken all of it on at once.
Totally agree. It's a lot. I think why I actually have fewer concerns about that than I do about the interview process is a few reasons. One, Ben Johnson said a factor in why he didn't take the Commanders or any of the other jobs last year is because he felt that as head coach, you have to not just be offense, but also defense and special teams, even if you're the offensive play caller. And he felt that he didn't yet have his plan of attack for all three phases. And that's something he worked on last summer. So I do think the fact that this is not his first crack and he's rushing into it will help him. But that said, I did talk to an AFC general manager this week who told me that they believe that there could actually be more of an acclimation period and some growing pains for Ben Johnson than even, say, an Aaron Glenn type, who this particular general manager thought that Aaron Glenn, the Lions defensive coordinator, would actually be better suited for head coach than coordinator because of some of his leadership skills. And he said he thought he was a run-of-the-mill coordinator, is what this guy said. He wasn't as impressed as I was in terms of how Aaron Glenn overcame the injuries, but he thought that Ben Johnson was more coordinator. Now, if it turns out that Ben Johnson is a schematic genius and an okay manager CEO type, this person said, well, then maybe he could be a Kyle Shanahan type, an OC plus, where he's head coach so you don't lose your play call and you're not at risk of him getting a promotion elsewhere, but maybe you let some other people take some of those responsibilities. What's interesting is that there have been a lot of reports and an expectation that the Bears will hire Dennis Allen to be their defensive coordinator, who was most recently the New Orleans Saints head coach after years as their defensive coordinator. And I think that that is always a great move when you have a first-time head coach, particularly one who will be taking on the play-calling responsibilities, to have someone who could essentially be the head coach of the defense while you're the head coach of the offense, even if you have a few things that you say, hey, I want you to do this so it works well, and I have to think about how all three phases are working together. But when I explain the way I want them to work together, then you take the defense from there. So I do think that there's some elements there. The other thing that's really interesting is, so the St. Brown brothers have a podcast. Amon-Ra St. Brown is a Lions receiver. Equanimeous, is that how you pronounce it?
Wow, I was waiting to see if you could get that one right. That was
Equanimeous. I think that's how it looks. St. Brown was a longtime Bears receiver. He played for the Saints this year. And the two of them had Caleb Williams on their podcast last week. And it was so fun because they were like, oh yeah, what's going to happen? Like Amon-Ra was like, I told Ben Johnson that Caleb, you suck. You're an effing diva. Like goes on and on about your heart to coach, not to go there. What he does with that information, I can't tell you. And Caleb goes, oh yeah, no, that's fair. Like whatever he wants to do with that information. And Equanimeous goes, Amon, he's gone. Say goodbye. And one, the whole interchange was great and a little bit prescient as Ben Johnson became the Bears head coach this week. But also something that Caleb said on that podcast was he selfishly did want an offensive head coach because he wants someone that he could grow with, as he said, for the next 19, 17, 15 years. And I do think that whether or not Ben Johnson figures out the CEO stuff himself or like let someone else do that. Oh, by the way, they have a gazillion people in top roles in their front office. So maybe some of them can take things off his hands. I do think that if he can ultimately be the play caller who can be aligned with Caleb in the way that he's talking about, then this will be a win.
By the way, real quick before we move on, I just do want to say, like, this is a big loss for the Detroit Lions, like who just came off a 15-2 season, number one seed in the NFC, obviously the crushing playoff loss. They're going to lose. They've lost Ben Johnson. They're probably almost definitely going to lose Aaron Glenn. That's tough. Like, we don't talk enough about coordinators. Me and Fitz and you, Jory, and C-Rob, we've all talked about this over and over. We don't, when the Cowboys lose a Dan Quinn or the Eagles lost their two coordinators after the Super Bowl run, we don't spend enough time talking about this is a really, really big loss. And this is a huge loss for the Lions. And it's, look, they're going to make hires. They got a lot of talent. They got a lot of great guys running the building from GM, head coach, all that. But losing a coordinator like Ben Johnson, there's a reason he was in demand the last 2 years. It's a huge blow for the Lions. It's going to be hard to replace him.
They're also losing positional coaches, as being reported. Now that the defensive line coach is going to become the defensive coordinator for the Patriots. Like their offensive line coach is in line on some reports to work on the new staff for Ben Johnson. Like their entire coaching staff right now could just get ripped apart, decimated by people that are poaching their favorites, their buddies, to go work on different teams. So I think that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's why this Lions season was so pivotal, not just because they had built up this roster, but because they retained both their coordinators and their head coach from last year. And I think when you look at one of the biggest examples of this, Kansas City, yes, Patrick Mahomes is incredible. Yes, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones in the building, but having Andy Reid every single year as offensive play caller and Steve Spagnuolo year to year as defensive playmakers absolutely keeps this going. And so I am curious for you guys, who do you think is going to be the favorite in the NFC North next year? Because we take one of the Lions' biggest strengths, move it to the Bears. All three of those teams that made the playoffs in the NFC North, we're seeing news. We've got Aaron Glenn to the Jets, according to Stone, doing God's work. This is God's work telling us that Aaron Glenn is going to the Jets.
This is God's work happening to me.
Yes.
We're seeing that the Aaron Glenn is the new head coach of the New York Jets, former Jet Aaron Glenn. I mean, we're getting the breaking news, so let's just break it down. Let's go straight to we will hold Jory's question because it's an interesting one of what we see for the future of the North. But the immediate news that we just got, Aaron Glenn to the Jets. Frank, your initial quick reaction.
I like this a lot, and it's one of those where you went into the offseason and the Jets' job was so bad because of Woody Johnson and because of the roster and because, like, there's just no reason to love this Jets' job. That's a terrible organization, terrible franchise, longest playoff drought in the NFL. So for them to go hire somebody as good as Aaron Glenn, and I thought Glenn was going to be a great hire for somebody, I think this is great for the Jets. Again, when these candidates looked around at the openings, they said, Jaguars, Raiders. I'll just take the Jets job, whatever. I have some familiarity there. So for the Jets to land Aaron Glenn, I think it's much better for the Jets than it is for Aaron Glenn. Let's put it that way. I hope Aaron Glenn works out for all the reasons Jory just talked about. Great leader. I love the answer he had. Somebody asked him about being a defensive coach, and he's like, I'm not just going to be a defensive coach. I'm going to be a coach. I know the offense. I know special teams. I know defense. I can't remember where the clip was, but it surfaced in the last week or so. I think that's who the Jets are getting, a real true leader, a guy who can take that dumpster fire of an organization and maybe make something of it. It's going to be hard. They need to give him patience. Patience that Jared Mayo didn't have. Patience that Steve Wilkes didn't have. You know where I'm going with this. Give Aaron Glenn some patience because this roster might just be in decay, especially if Aaron Rodgers leaves. So I love the hire. I hope the Jets do right by Aaron Glenn and give him some time.
Yeah, I think that this should be great for the Jets. I think when you look at the defensive talent they had, I would want a primarily defensive coach because I think that that is where your team is more ready to win. And so if you can make sure to maximize that, that's going to be your biggest thing. I think when you look at this, I mean, this is a huge win for the Jets and a loss for the Saints. He had history with both organizations and both organizations had interest in him. I think this also makes Mike McCarthy, in my opinion, the favorite to land the Saints job. I think those two were kind of the favorites down in New Orleans. And the same way I look at Ben Johnson taking the Chicago job over the Jacksonville job as primarily, if not only, but primarily about wanting to work with Caleb Williams over Trevor Lawrence, it is really interesting to say, I believe more in the Jets roster than I believe in the Saints roster. Because I don't think most people believe more in Jets ownership than they believe in Saints ownership.
You mean Ambassador Johnson? Put some respect on his name.
No, we're not calling him that. I had an executive text me about us using that on last episode, and I shouldn't even acknowledge that you're bringing this up. We are not calling him that.
No, we'll call it
Woody. We're calling him Woody, like the guy from Toy Story. Anyway. What I will say, though, is
I'd rather have the guy from Toy Story.
How dare you?
If you want to talk about testing your leadership skills very early, needing to navigate what is undoubtedly going to be a sensitive conversation with Aaron Rodgers is going to be the biggest test. Whether that's convincing Aaron he should stay and be a team player, whether that's gracefully moving on from him and convincing the franchise and the fans why that's a good idea, or anything similar of, hey, we have Aaron Rodgers, but we also are drafting some guy who we want Aaron to help us develop, because I'm sure that's going to work really well as it did with Jordan Love, but that's another story. I think that is going to be fascinating to see as like the number one first task for Aaron Glenn on the job.
All right, the breaking news continues. It seems like it's that sort of podcast day for us. We have breaking news. No sooner did we find out that Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive coordinator Liam Cohen was taking himself out of any consideration for the Jacksonville job, gets a new deal, a big extension, lots of money to stay in Tampa Bay. And now we find out that the Jags, late in this process, Jory, are firing GM Trent Baalke. It's not that he's being fired that's a surprise. It's that he wasn't fired. They go through the interview process, and now he's fired. Like, this just feels like, yet again, a dysfunction from a dysfunctional organization.
Yeah, it's fascinating because I think that the Jacksonville Jaguars and Las Vegas Raiders were in similar situations of, hey, do we really believe in that GM? Is a head coach going to want them? And then when Tom Telesco was fired after Antonio Pierce, it kind of felt a little late. That was 2 days. This is about 2 weeks. And I definitely think we see, okay, well, Ben Johnson might not have wanted to go there for that reason. It's too late on him. Aaron Glenn. Well, now Aaron Glenn is going to be with the New York Jets. And oh, by the way, Liam Cohen already told the Buccaneers he's coming back. Could that change? So I think you got to the point where it feels like the Jaguars were getting candidates who did not want to come into this structure. And the degree to which that's about Trent personally versus a system that didn't work and wanting to bring in your own guy or some other reason, I think that there are different elements at play here. But I think ultimately I would want to know, hey, Liam Cohen, now are you interested? What if you get your own GM? And, oh, all these other people, whether that's Anthony Weaver, Todd Monken, or someone else, is there a specific candidate who they really wanted as the best candidates in theory, or the most coveted candidates were going off the board that's no longer there? Frank, what do you think? Like, who do you think will now be the coach based off this move? And who's going to be the general manager?
Well, the real answer to that should be nobody should want this job. This is one of the funnier stories I've seen in a really long time. The Jacksonville Jaguars are an absolute joke of an organization. And it starts at the top. Their owner, Shad Khan, just couldn't be bothered with a GM search and a head coaching search. So he tried to do it halfway. He's like, I'll just keep Trent Baalke because I really don't want to deal with this. And everybody already knew this weeks ago that this isn't going to work. Keeping Trent Baalke is not a recipe for landing any good candidate. But Shad Khan is so disconnected with his team, he doesn't really care. So he just goes about it, whatever, just deal with it. Trent, we'll figure it out. And what they did figure out was nobody wants his job in that setup. They lost on some top candidates, and they just look like one of the laughing stocks of the NFL now, as they should. There's a reason this franchise loses double-digit games year after year after year, and it's a reason nobody really wanted that job. And it's just a bad franchise. It's the same franchise that employed Urban Meyer, okay? They're going nowhere. He kicked the kicker. It finally took that for Shad Khan to finally fire him. And even the wording of firing Urban Meyer was like, I guess you guys wanted this to happen. Like, he's just a bad owner, and you can't get out of bad ownership. And me and Fitz have talked about that, how that's the one roadblock to being a winner in the NFL is you have a bad owner. The Jacksonville Jaguars have a bad owner. Now, they do have, we're one of 32. That's what they're going to sell these guys. Maybe they can get Liam Cohen back on board. Maybe they could have Anthony Weaver decide, hey, my timing's right. I got to jump at this now because these job opportunities don't always present themselves. But realistically, any good candidate should look at the Jacksonville Jaguars so sideways after this and say, that is a franchise that has no idea what they're doing. And it's not going to get better as long as ownership stays in place. And I don't want that job because it's an absolute dead end. I can't be more blunt about it. This is an absolute joke that this happened to the Jaguars this offseason.
Frank, the fact that they have taken this much time to fire their GM and now they're behind on the hiring cycle and they missed out on coaches that could possibly get the best out of the roster proves their incompetence. And at this point, if I'm Trevor Lawrence, I walk into Shad Khan and I say, trade me. Like, you are ruining my career.
100%.
You are absolutely 100%. Destroying my ability to be a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Like, he deserves
what is the appeal for Trevor Lawrence to want to stay there? I know contracts and all these things we've got to talk about that have to be worked out, and it's not that simple. But for this second, let's just acknowledge the fact that if I'm Trevor Lawrence, I don't care about what's simple anymore. All I care about is my career, my legacy, my lifetime of work is being trashed because my organization doesn't know how to do the very basic things at a competent level. You couldn't even fire people the right way. And now I got to trust you to hire people the right way? No. If I'm Trevor Lawrence, I want out. I got to find a new place and I got to have some opportunity to salvage my career. But the Jags have clearly proven that all they're going to do is ruin everybody that walks into that organization.
Fitz, I'm glad you bring that up because I think that when Frank is talking, he's like, they're one of 32. I'm like, but they're not one of 32 because they have Trevor Lawrence. And as we've talked about, especially if you're a general manager, but really if you're a head coach, if you don't have your quarterback, you're not going to win. And so I think that is the question, is that assuming Trevor Lawrence either doesn't go ask for that trade or doesn't get it granted, I think this should still be a desirable job. I think they have more talent than they have been getting out of.
But it's just that it's so dysfunctional at the top. It's hard to win when that happens. Now, I will say this. The Houston Texans,
more dysfunctional
we would talk about
than
them.
The Jets?
Ooh, more dysfunctional than the Raiders?
Ambassador Johnson would like a word there, Jory.
Oh, but no.
I will say, like 2 years ago, we were talking about the Houston Texans the same way. They were a horrendous organization. They made one Grand Slam hire with DeMeco Ryans, who set the culture there, and it turned around. Maybe Jacksonville
and
could do the same.
And they got a quarterback. Jacksonville already has a quarterback,
has,
Frank.
Theoretically. I mean, he's still
under contract.
We'll see. I mean, he hasn't been what we thought he'd be. But yes, theoretically, they have a quarterback. If they make the right hire, if Anthony Weaver comes in and just cleans house and sets a culture, you can overcome bad ownership that way. But right now, the Jacksonville Jaguars have just shown their behinds this offseason of, hey, there's a lot of dysfunctional organizations in the NFL, but we lead that list. That's what we get out of the last 2 weeks of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I'm stunned as we sit here, and I've said this repeatedly. I'll say it one more time. When Trevor Lawrence was drafted, my comment was, the Jags would fail Trevor Lawrence before Trevor Lawrence fails the Jags. That's exactly what they've done. Aggressively.
Absolutely.
They have tried to ruin a transcendent talent. And I don't know if Trevor Lawrence is going to turn out to be a great NFL quarterback, but I damn well know that if he doesn't, then a lot of that blame lies right squarely at the feet of the Jacksonville Jaguars. They have put on a clinic on how to ruin a quarterback. All right, we'll go from bad to worse. I don't know. We got plenty more coaching to break down, including if we're going to talk about bad, we got breaking news on the Raiders. We'll break it down when we come back. Okay, so we've got dominoes falling. As we said, Liam Cohen is staying in Tampa Bay. Aaron Glenn is headed to the Jets. Ben Johnson is headed, as we all know, to the Bears. Quick breaking news also, as I'm now seeing this on Adam Schefter's timeline, and my timeline's blown up about it. Buccaneers assistant GM John Spytek apparently is going to be the new GM of my beloved Raiders. So we have a hire there, which came first, the chicken or the egg. I will say this, guys. I know we've talked a lot of Ben Johnson. I talked to some people that I trust around the Raiders organization. They were pretty confident this Ben Johnson thing was going to happen. Like, and you know, that's been echoed by Diana Rossini. It's been echoed by several people around the league that I trust and do a good job covering. Everybody sort of thought this was happening. So I don't know what plan B is. I've heard Pete Carroll, but we'll see. John Spytek seems to be the new GM there. What the hell that means, I don't actually know. We do know at this point the Patriots are hiring Josh McDaniels to be, it looks like, their new offensive coordinator for what feels like his 87th there. Any surprise? He goes back. I hope he didn't sell his house. I hope the first time that he bought the house, he kept the house, and then each time he's just rented
just like Airbnb it or something.
Because like buying in the Boston area has got to be much more expensive than it was the first time he bought in the Boston area. But he's headed home, it looks like, to Mike Vrabel. Jory, any surprise there?
Not surprising. I think we all have talked on this podcast for a while about this being the most likely option. I think the perception around the league is that Josh McDaniels is much more successful and much more coveted as an offensive coordinator than a head coach after his failed head coaching stints. I think when I look at this, though, what I would caution Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels and their staff is don't just try and be what you were 15 years ago in your glory days. Like, don't try and just do that again, because you don't have Bill Belichick, you don't have Tom Brady. It's not going to work. And I'm not saying that they're sure to do that, but I think if I'm Josh McDaniels, I'm coming back to New England, I would want to understand, who is Drake May? Who do you have right now on offense? Who don't you have? Which, by the way, I think is a pretty long list of what they don't have on that offensive roster in terms of talent. And how can you maximize that? And I'm not doubting his ability to do that. I'm just saying, I think as humans, when we have a familiar environment and we go back somewhere, we kind of fall into this pattern. And so I think that they will need to be cognizant of that being the natural step and say, no, that's not what we're going to do. Let's honestly assess the roster. Let's honestly assess what Elliott Wolf, their de facto general manager, is going to be doing and what they want from him, and then move forward with the people we have in the building as opposed to what we think we had 15 years ago.
Yeah, those are really good points. I think a lot of the Patriot way is sometimes stuck in the past, trying to replicate things where, all right, you don't have a Tom Brady. Like, you're not going to be able to do the Patriot way because you're not Bill Belichick necessarily, X's and O's wise. So I think those are great points. I do like the hire of Josh McDaniels a lot. I've chided Josh McDaniels a lot through the years, but I do think he's a good offensive coordinator. The one thing I will say, though, his record without Tom Brady is kind of sketchy. Like, I like the hire. I do think he's a really, really smart offensive mind. But we do have to keep in mind that almost all of his success came with maybe the greatest quarterback of all time. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But I think that was a right fit for Mike Vrabel and getting that done. Now, Jory, I just want to talk to you one-on-one. Fitz doesn't need to listen to this because he kind of like moved it along so we didn't have to talk about this. But what does Ben, like, when Ben Johnson to the Raiders was the hot topic, right? We all were, every one of us, and probably Fitz too, was like, this doesn't make any sense. Why would Ben Johnson want that job? And now we're kind of back to square one of, yeah, why would anybody want this Raiders job? Do you have any hope that they land a good candidate? Because there's no quarterback there. The organization has been stuck in a lot of losing ways for many, many years. There's not a lot to sell a candidate right now. Do you think the Raiders are going to make a good hire in this cycle? Or is it just going to be, again, one of 32? This is what we have to offer you.
Frank, you are a son of a biscuit. I just want to let you know that. Now okay. You guys can talk.
You're about to get yet another version of Cynical Jory today, because I was so annoyed watching Tom Brady or listening to Tom Brady broadcast on Saturday night and not mention Ben Johnson's name and like deflect the question from Kevin Burkhart, because I just think at some point, if you're a broadcaster, you should be talking to the players and coaches and in the building and being able to bring that. And if you decide that you are so set on being an owner or part owner, minority owner, whatever, and a broadcaster, be transparent about that. Acknowledge that. Make a joke about it. Be like, oh, yeah, you know me. Like, I talked to him, and I'm sure he doesn't want me saying too much right now, rather than just avoiding it.
It was awful. It was stupid.
Because then it's just, like, not respectful of the audience and, like, the intelligence that we all have.
100%.
I would love it, Jory. I would love it. If once, because he cannot question officials as a minority owner, I would love it on a bad call if on the broadcast he just said, well, as y'all know, I can't question officials, so I'm not going to say anything here. Like, that would that would go over like a home run. We would absolutely freak for Tom Brady being that human.
And Jory, by the way, also, he's not just like some minority owner like Magic Johnson with the Commanders. Like, Tom Brady, from all accounts, is like running the show almost. Like,
that's what I'm getting at here.
What's going on, right?
The reason I say this is because I think that the whole concept of Ben Johnson to the Raiders, who are not an organization, who fire coaches super quickly, who don't have a quarterback, who had just shown to be very trigger happy, was the idea that, well, Tom Brady is going to get Ben Johnson. Well, good for Ben Johnson for not doing everything and not acting like Tom Brady is God and is going to be able to not only fix something because of who he is, but fix everything at the same time in the broadcasting, ownership, coaching. Like, no, that's not realistic. It's not how the world works. And I mean, I guess it's fair for Tom Brady, given his success, to try and chase that. But I think that it's good for someone to be like, no, you have limitations, and you being in the front office does not mean that all of a sudden your quarterback problem is not a problem. It is a problem. So when I look at the Raiders job, I think that they have things to offer. I think they have Brock Bowers. I think they have some defensive pieces. And if they could stop, like, they should have some assets in the draft, given that, oh, by the way, Devontae Adams, who else have we had lately? Darren Waller wasn't so long ago. Josh Jacobs, right? That's who I'm thinking. Like, they keep trading guys away. So there's definitely people, plus Christian Wilkins. We haven't really seen what he's done yet. I think that they have building blocks to build on, but no one should take that job because Tom Brady is influencing Mark Davis. I just think that that would be super naive.
I think that has been the most overrated thing this month, of everybody saying, oh, Ben Johnson's going to take it because of Tom Brady. Like, I get it. Brady was a great quarterback and a great leader.
I'm so glad that people were wrong about that.
yes, I agree, because I kept looking at it like, why would you take that job based on a guy who was obviously a great quarterback and a great leader, like a respected leader, but he has no experience doing this job? How do we know Tom Brady's going to fix the Raiders? Like, he might. Tom Brady's a really, really smart dude. He knows football. But, like, this whole narrative of, like, well, Tom Brady could get anybody he wants because he's Tom Brady. He's going to get Ben Johnson. Like, really? Like, why would you, if you're Ben Johnson and you're looking at all the factors that go into taking any job, why would you look and say, Tom Brady, that's why I want the Raiders job. It's so deficient in every other area, but Tom Brady, like, he's a 5% owner. What are we talking about here?
So right. I think
if he
two
was
things.
A general manager or even an assistant GM or the director or something, fine, but this is not his full-time job.
Right. Like,
two things
you don't
get
to talk about the Raiders here.
Two things can be true. You're right about everything you've just said. Yeah. All right. Two things can be true at the same time. Number one, I do not believe that you can half-ass being an owner of an NFL team. I don't believe that you can have a part-time job where you're turning around and you're like, you know what? My part-time side hustle is owning an NFL team. I don't believe you can do that and do a quality job. So I believe that half of Tom Brady is a problem. I don't think that you can sort of weasel your way through that. And
5%, 10%. 5%,
yeah. But even if it's getting a third of the effort of his day, I don't think that you can do a quality job on that. I don't think this is about Tom Brady, though. I think this is about not Mark Davis. Like, at some point, I don't believe that there's anybody in the league, as a player, as a league executive, as a coach, that actually looks at Mark Davis and gives him any respect. Like, you can respect the fact that he's good to players and all of these things, but if you're actually asking the football mind of Mark Davis to gain respect from anybody, that doesn't exist. So now you got a guy that, frankly, coaches and front office people shouldn't respect because he's not done anything to earn it, sitting across from you saying, I have a job. So I think the only thing that Tom Brady offers is a shield, where it's like, you know what Tom Brady is? He's not Mark Davis. And so
Hi, I'm Tom Brady. Cynical Jory might agree with that, I believe. Because, yes, I totally agree.
I do think that that is the proper lens through which to view Tom Brady, is if Mark Davis has 10 crazy decisions, he might be able to convince him out of 2 to 3 of them. I also think, though, it's not even just not about, I actually think that you can be a halfway owner, because I think if you hire the right people, you don't need to do a whole lot. I think we should just acknowledge the influence that you have, though. Like, there are plenty of well-run organizations who don't have meddling owners or who don't have super involved donors. I can think of one in particular that I visited where the owners aren't usually there. They don't live in town, all of that. And the organization was one of the winningest teams this year, made the playoffs. And so you can do that. Just be honest about what bandwidth you have, what your role is, and who you're hiring to do a really good job while you work on your other businesses, which a lot of these owners do.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's no easy solution to it. That's why, frankly, I mean, the hot rumor for the Raiders on who they're going to get, many people that cover the team are saying Pete Carroll is going to be the guy. And we could talk about Pete Carroll's age, and we could talk about the fact that Pete's old, fine. But to Jory's point, to C. Rob's point that he made with us a couple of weeks ago, the Raiders have had their next head coach will be their 15th coach in the last 31 years. So if Pete Carroll coaches for 3 years, he's already made it above the league average for the Raiders, and sadly. But what Pete Carroll would offer, and what anybody I think that's been there before that hopefully comes from the right type of organization could offer, is some idea and concept of how to put culture together, right?
Culture,
For me, if I can pick anybody at this point out of the candidates that are out there to be the coach of the Raiders, I want Spags. Give me Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator of the Chiefs. In that process, you're bringing somebody over from the Chiefs that understands what that Chiefs organization has done. You're bringing me somebody that's been a head coach. You're bringing me somebody that's one of the smartest football minds in all of this. And you're bringing me somebody that understands a winning organization, a winning culture. So somebody that knows the AFC West. At this point, it's a roll of the dice.
I hate to say this, Fitz, but why would Spags take that job? Like,
he wouldn't.
He shouldn't. Like, he has such a good gig right now. The dude might make the Hall of Fame being defensive coordinator, by the way, which has never happened before. He should. I agree with that. Like, if I'm Spags at this point in my life, I think he's in his early 60s. I'm saying, boy, I got something good right here. Why screw this up? I'm just going to coach defense. I'm going to win Super Bowls. I know that Andy's going to have the offense great. Why would I go to try to turn the Raiders around? Like, he did that once. He went from the Giants to the Rams. It turned out spectacularly awful. If I'm Spags, I'm like, nah, I'm good. Unless the perfect opportunity comes around. And that's kind of where I am with this Raiders job or the Jaguars job or even the Saints job at this point.
Only thing I'd say is, according to reports, the Raiders were prepared to offer 6 years, $90 million to Josh McDaniels. Like, that's $15 million a year. Oof. So when you're looking at why, like $15 million a year, beautiful facility, one of the best practice facilities you'll ever see. The overall process around there, the organization, screwed, right? Like, ownership, not particularly smart with football. Doesn't mean they're not trying. Willing to spend money, willing to be aggressive in free agency, willing to do everything that you want them to do. You're being run by a moron. So, like, yes, you're being run by a moron, but the rest of the systems, and saying it that way is going to get me in trouble with the Raiders. But let's be clear. Mark Davis, when it comes to actual football stuff, not the business, I don't care about the business, but the football stuff, Mark Davis has proven himself to be an idiot. Can't hire the right people consistently. But your only hope if you're being hired is that, all right, it's a ton of money. There are some building blocks. It's a head coaching job in the NFL. It's guaranteed money. I mean, I can think of 90 million reasons why I would take the job, because that's how much they're putting in my bank account.
If I were a lawyer and I was looking at this contract and the Raiders said, hey, we're going to pay $90 million for our coach over the next 6 years, I would want to make very clear that the $90 million was going to this coach and not the three other coaches that they're still paying. Because I think, is it $90 million to the four coaches we're paying? Because there's a lot of people on that payroll. But what? I do think it's interesting, and there's the money. I still think that, like, they should go after an Anthony Weaver type, who I think seems to be increasingly attractive to whether it's the Jaguars or the Raiders. But I think that you just hear so many good things about him and what he's done in Miami. And think about that defensive culture. I mean, they did not speak very highly of Vic Fangio over there, and there are multiple people they didn't like, and Anthony Weaver came in. So that's who I would chase if I were them.
To that point, Jory, I think one or two things they're going to have to do. The Raiders are going to have to do one or two things simply. They're going to have to overspend on a name, or they're going to have to overspend on a young talent that they think is going to blossom. And you're going to have to take a risk either way. I just don't think that this is a job at this point that you just lay out and you're like, here's my job. Like, no clear path to a quarterback in a division that looks absolutely, to your point, they're either going to have to bet early on somebody or they're going to have to overpay to bet late on somebody.
And that's what point I was going to make here, is that one of my soapboxes I'm getting on lately is there's no salary cap for coaches. And when we talk about, whoa, $90 million over 6 years for a coach, that's $15 million a year. You're paying your quarterback four times that. Why is the coaching pay scale so low compared to quarterbacks? Because if you're asking me, If Patrick Mahomes is worth $60 million a year, he's probably worth more than that, but let's just go with $60 million a year. Isn't Andy Reid worth about 50? Maybe 55, maybe 60, and there's no salary cap with it. You could convince me he's worth $75 million a year if a quarterback's worth 60. Because so what, like, I don't know why a team like the Raiders or the Jaguars or whoever, NFL teams print money. We all know that, right? So if they come in and say, Ben Johnson's a guy we want. We think he's the next Sean McVay. What would it take? Okay, the Bears are offering him $13 million a year. We'll give you 26. We don't care. There's no cap for coaches. We want the guy we want to get. I don't know why NFL teams don't operate this way other than most team owners care more about increasing their personal wealth and winning. That's period, point blank.
I just love the – I love a concept where Andy Reid gets offered $100 million a year to jump ship. Like,
why not?
Kool-Aid man running through the door for his $100 million payment.
If you're Mark Davis and you've screwed this up a million times and somehow you can get Andy Reid, and Andy Reid goes, it would take me $100 million to take your job. Mark Davis should say, all right, fine, cool. There's no cap. Like, why not? Like, go get your guy. Like, again, if quarterbacks are worth 50 plus million, why are coaches – why are we falling off of our seats that a coach can get 15 million?
Well, part of that is because you have to spend the salary cap and you don't have to spend the other. But Frank, you make a good point, and you did change my mind, because a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Jerry Jones and whether he was cheap, I was like, I don't think he's cheap. I think he just philosophically doesn't believe this. And you made me realize that that is being cheap, even if he's not cheap because he can't spend the money. He is cheap for choosing not to spend the money and use the advantages he has to put together a winning product.
And that's how you end up with Brian Schottenheimer.
What a perfect segue. Speaking of, Jory, you tweeted out this morning, the Cowboys brass continuing conversations with Brian Schottenheimer about their head coaching opening. Multiple sources tell you met yesterday and now today, heating up per one source. Was Shotty already in town? Whether it's second interview or first is semantics. All right. So is this where we're landing? Is this what we think is happening for Dallas at this point?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, you just read my reports. So that's definitely part of what I think on this. But I think what is interesting is I really thought by the end of last week that Kellen Moore was going to be the guy. I went to Philadelphia, and it was so funny watching Kellen Moore walk out of the tunnel onto the field and then walk back in. And Kellen Moore is so even keeled that if you saw that guy walking, like, without everything around him, you would not know that he was going to the NFC Championship game for the first time in his career. And you would not know that he was a favorite to land the most high-profile job in the NFL, or maybe Dallas Cowboys quarterback and head coach are the two most high-profile. I think what's interesting is that when you look at Kellen coming back, you say, okay, you've got an offensive mind that's had a lot of success places. I've talked to general managers, executives who have interviewed him and just think very highly of him as a schematic mind, as a play designer, and also as an emotionally intelligent person who can help manage the different elements of the organization, which is really important when you're working with Jerry Jones, because there's a lot to manage there. And I don't even mean that critically necessarily. I just mean that realistically. Then this week, all of a sudden, Vegas starts saying, no, Brian Schottenheimer, who's been the Cowboys offensive coordinator for the last 2 years, in the building for three, but not called plays once in that time, is the betting favorite. And Vegas knows a lot of things. And then it starts to come out like, hey, they actually are sitting down with him. There's a part of me that says, if you're the Cowboys and you want to get as much coaching talent in the building, why don't you make Brian Schottenheimer your offensive coordinator and someone else your head coach? Because no one else is interviewing him that we've heard of. So you should be able to get two great coaches for the price of one, or not the literal price, but basically given what Jerry pays. What I think this comes down to, though, is if you look at Brian Schottenheimer and Kellen Moore side by side, you could say, if you want a little bit more of a dynamic presence, a little bit more of an extrovert, Brian Schottenheimer definitely is that. I think Kellen would tell you that, too. Like, that's not his personality. Now, he's figured out how to manage a lot of different dynamics in Dallas and Philly and other places. And when he was in college as the winningest quarterback in college football history at Boise State, but he's definitely not a loud, brash guy. Brian Schottenheimer has a little more of that fire. Both of them understand the Joneses very well. Both of them understand Dak very well. Where Kellen has the edge is that Kellen has been an offensive coordinator with play calling for each of the last 6 years. Shotty has not called plays since 2020 with the Seahawks. He was then with the Jaguars for a year, then as a defensive consultant for the Cowboys, and then under Mike McCarthy. And so I would wonder, and I reached out to someone who used to work with him on Monday night, and I was like, what do you even think his scheme would look like? Because I don't have a sense, since he hasn't called plays in some time. What interested me even more than his schematic influence was that the person who used to work with him, again, as with most people in this industry, if you're not working somewhere anymore, you typically got fired. And so what was interesting to me is how highly this person spoke of Brian Schottenheimer, because you don't often hear that when a guy doesn't work out, especially if he's pushed out of the building. And this person was like, look, he came into our building. He took his offense, totally made the terminology that had already been here work with his offense to try and help our quarterback, which I think really reflected that. They felt like he got more out of the quarterback than any other offensive coordinator before or after did. And I think that it was just interesting to me hearing what positive reviews there are. And when I told that to someone in the Cowboys organization today, they said, that's great to hear. I'd be really happy with that hire. So I do think this is picking up legitimate momentum. There's some like conspiracy theory versions in Dallas of like, oh, are they just going to make Jason Witten the Dan Campbell and Brian Schottenheimer offensive coordinator? And as part of this interview asking, are you good with Jason Witten being your boss? But I do think that he is a legitimate candidate. And the last thing I'll say is I asked people around the league, I'm like, don't you have to ask yourself why no one else is interviewing Brian Schottenheimer and other people are interviewing Kellen? We've talked about how owners and management often are dysfunctional in this league, so I'm not trying to give them too much credit, but I still think there is a legitimate question of why does no one else want this guy in the building? And what the person said to me, which I think is fair, is Kellen has this intrigue. He's never been seen as a head coach. Like you don't know what the ceiling is, and so you can envision it being so high. Brian Schottenheimer is the son of longtime head coach Marty Schottenheimer. He's been around for so long, been an offensive coordinator dating back like 15, 20 years. At some point, it's just not exciting, but that doesn't mean it wouldn't work. And so in ending, I would just say that there are people who believe that this would be a good hire, even if it's not the sexy hire that every team is vying for.
What do you think, real quick, Jory, what do you think Schottenheimer brings to the table that has gotten Jerry Jones interested? Is it the leadership part of this? Is it the familiarity, which I find really, really weird that that's like number one on his list? Is it schematics? Because Schottie's always been known as a conservative play caller, and he's gotten ripped for that for years and years. That was kind of always his reputation. I'm curious, like when I think about when this came out, when the odds, Vegas changed the odds, right? And all of a sudden, Schottenheimer went from like not even in the conversation to a -250 favorite. I was like, why? Like, what does Jerry see in him? And that's why I ask you, what does Jerry see in him that it's seemingly vaulted up to the top of the list?
Yeah, I do think a lot of it is how well he understands the interpersonal dynamics of the Cowboys. I don't even know if I just put that on familiarity, because that's what struck me when I first sat down with him. And I had a pretty extended sit-down interview with Brian Schottenheimer during training camp in 2023. And this was the point when he had just transitioned from being the defensive assistant to offensive coordinator. And what struck me is how well he understood the dynamics of Dak Prescott, of that offense, of the Jones family, just different people of like the third string wide receiver and what would make him tick to get him to play more like a second string wide receiver. So I do think there's this element of like, if we did a lot of good things, but Mike McCarthy couldn't ultimately get us over the hump, and so we needed some sort of a fresh voice. Well, Schottie is in some ways a fresh voice. Now, again, I don't know that it's not the most creative hire. I don't know that it's going to work, but I think this would be more about there's not enough evidence necessarily to believe that Kellen is going to be so much better than Schottie to not try Schottie. And I do think that that is a factor. And Jerry, again, we've talked about how Jerry Jones views the best of people and says, that's what they can get me to. Brian Schottenheimer has had a lot of experience calling a lot of different games. I actually don't think he'd be a bad head coach. I just think you need to ask yourself, do you think he's the best play caller for 2025? And I don't currently feel like we have evidence to show that he is.
And it just seems like, and Marty Schottenheimer was a great, great head coach. Maybe Brian will be too. It could work out spectacularly. But I do think you do ask the question, is this the best the Dallas Cowboys could do? They have more money than everybody else. This was the best opening.
That's not relevant, Frank. We've discussed this. They're not going to spend more money than everyone else.
But like, this was the best opening. And this is the one hire they could make, which would have Cowboys fans being like, boy, Mike McCarthy wasn't all that bad. It might be Brian Schottenheimer. Nobody would be excited about this hire. Nobody.
Maybe nobody would be excited, but I will say this in defense of Jerry Jones for a second. We talk about a lot with free agency in the draft. You never know. Like in the draft, you can scout somebody. You can talk to their family. You can talk to their coaches. You don't know them until they get in the building. In free agency, so often we see that contract given overnight. It's a ton of money, and you bring somebody in, and you think you know. You talk to people around the league, but until they're in your building, you don't know. I do think we have to acknowledge with coaches the same sort of thing. Like there is something to, as much as we want to in this process, critique Jerry Jones for being particular about working with people he knows, I know plenty of people in other industries that take the same exact approach. Like, hey, I want somebody, if I'm going to put my entire fortune in the hands, whether I run a widget company or a warehouse or a football team, I want somebody that I know. So I do think in this process, I will give Jerry at least a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, whether we're talking about Kellen Moore when he was in the building or Shoddy, who's in the building now. Having somebody in there that you look at, you're like, man, I really think this guy's got it. Advancing somebody that you've had the opportunity to work with rather than going outside the building, I just think there is devil you know in all businesses, and more often than not, it can be really good. Let's be clear here. Jerry has done it. Like, we talked earlier about Mark Davis being terrible at hiring people. Jerry may have not hired the Super Bowl winning coach that so many Dallas Cowboys fans want him to hire year in and year out, but he has also not hired a coach that took them to 3-14 for 10 straight years. And we can't say that about every owner.
Yeah, I think this could work out. He knows Brian Schottenheimer pretty well. It's just surprising to me that this, of all the guys the Cowboys could have, where they should have legitimately come into this offseason saying, we have our choice of anybody we want because we're the Dallas Cowboys and we have all this set up, that Brian Schottenheimer, a kind of underwhelming offensive coordinator the past few years, like, it could work out spectacularly. And Jerry does, look, he's got a gold jacket. Let's prove it, Jerry.
But you're right. Cowboys fans are freak. Cowboys fans
want freak out. They'll freak out. Like, this is the best we could do. Like, this is it. Like, wow. Like, that's surprising to me.
You don't go from Dion to Shoddy.
I would be curious if he gets this job. One of the first questions I would want to ask him is, during the year that you worked with Dan Quinn in the Cowboys organization, scouting other teams, what did you change in your philosophy? And I went back to my 2023 interview yesterday and started looking through it. And it was interesting. I mean, he was taking me through, like, hey, when the Eagles are working, the difference between their run read option and their run pass option, and which one is pre-snap triggers and which one is post-snap, and how you can try and exploit that. And I mean, he definitely was giving me specific examples, which, as a reporter, when people give you cliches all the time, I appreciated. So I do think that the same way that Dan Quinn kind of went through a schematic self-assessment and personality self-assessment about his leadership in between being in Atlanta and Dallas, Brian Schottenheimer did something similar. And I will also say, again, while I have questions about, could you get two really good coaches if you can get this guy as offensive coordinator, the flip side of that is, remember, oh, we're so excited about Ben Johnson now. Or remember who really wanted Ben Johnson last year and was stuck with Dan Quinn and we thought it was an uninspiring hire on a lot of fronts? Well, yep. They're headed to the NFC Championship for the
good
first
point.
Time since 1991.
Very good.
All point. Right. Speaking of the NFC Championship, Jory's going to be at the game. We'll break it down after we take a quick break. NFC Championship game this weekend. Jory, you'll be in Philly. Have we looked at the weather yet? Do we know, like, you have like 87 layers ready to go? Like, it's going to be cold?
I'm so glad you asked, Fitz. It's going to be like 20s. We'll be fine. But I must tell you, being from Texas, I'm like, oh yeah, down in Texas, when there's snow and ice, no one clears the road and you just acknowledge that you're going to like slip and like bruise your hip once or twice. But in the Northeast, they figure it out. Sure don't. Like, in New York and Philly both this week, I have been underwhelmed by the clearing of ice off the streets. And I was so excited on Monday. I was like, you know what? It snowed, but it feels like 15 degrees rather than 4 degrees wind chill. So I'm going to go for a run. And then I tried to get down to the little path on the Schuylkill River that I like. And it was very snowy. And icy.
Yeah, well, that's what you get for trying to run when it's like 15 degrees outside, Jory. Like, that, God invented treadmills for a reason. God specifically,
no,
not man.
No, yeah, we are not a pro treadmill podcast.
That is. You are not a pro treadmill podcaster, but I am a pro treadmill. I'm a tready
pro
sort
fresh
of guy.
Air.
Okay. Frank, you could chime in on podcasts if you want, but also on the game. Let me just start.
Frank
here.
Is like, Jory, it's -20 when chill in Denver.
No,
calm down by
that.
Your 10 degrees.
I'm not dealing with any of that cold weather. As a kid from Wisconsin, I am seriously soft when it comes to cold weather. I'm staying in the house at all times.
So let's look at this game at this point. How concerned are we, guys, about the Eagles' lack of ability to throw the football? Given the amount of talent that they have on the offensive side of the ball, particularly the weapons they have and what we expect of Jalen Hurts, like, Frank, should we be concerned? We're in the NFC Championship game. The Eagles' offense still seems like it's out of whack from the passing stance.
It's stunning, actually, that this team in two playoff games has 186 net passing yards. Combined, like, this isn't
that's
per
wild.
Game.
I actually thought
that's
it would
wild.
Be
that's
less.
Combined, like 65 last week. But this formula works for them. Saquon Barkley's Superman. They have a great defense. They're 14-1 since the end of September. And this is just how they're going to play. It's very old school. And I don't think they care. They just have figured out, like, nobody can stop Saquon. I do wonder if Jalen Hurts' injury affects a run game, because if the Commanders can figure out early that Jalen Hurts can't really move around with that knee injury he suffered against the Rams, all of a sudden that takes away an element you don't got to worry about. Like, if you know Jalen Hurts isn't mobile, you could just focus on Saquon, and that's easier said than done. I get that. The Commanders did not have a good run defense this year at all. They gave up the third most rushing yards, fifth most rushing yards per carry. There's a bad rushing defense, and that seems like a terrible, terrible matchup against the Eagles. But I'll just, like, this is the thing. Like, yes, the Eagles' lack of a passing game bother me, sure. But they don't lose, and they're just very comfortable with the way they play, which is, we're playing 1974 style, where we're just going to play better defense than you and get the ball to Saquon 30 times.
It's so funny, because I feel like we often talk about offenses that are pick your poison offenses. And I think we've even described the Eagles that multiple times in the last couple of years, whether it's pick your poison or either earlier this year, Jalen Hurts had an idea of you got to water the grass in different places and we want to make sure it's all working, use different tools in the toolbox, all the metaphors you want. I would not describe the Eagles as a pick your poison team in the sense that at any moment they could pick any poison. But what I think I came to the conclusion of after being in Philly the last 2 weeks and I'm coming back this coming week is that, to me, winning in the playoffs, when it's 1 out of 1, lose, you go home, versus a 4 out of 7, you have to take the strengths of your team, filter it through the lens of the circumstances you can't control in the game. So, for example, the snow was one of those last week, the opponent is another one, and then go maximize that. And that's what the Eagles are doing. Their passing game is not what any of them want it to be. They are all saying that, and offensive players across the locker room kept saying, thank God for our defense, or we probably wouldn't be celebrating right now. And I think it's good that they acknowledge that. But to Kellen Moore's credit as a play caller, Jalen Hurts' credit in terms of the dynamic, and even A.J. Brown, who really hasn't been complaining, he's been like, did you know that I blocked on both of those rushing touchdowns? Like, look at that block I got. Look what I did. I do see my block on the Dallas Goedert stiff arm the year before. Like, they actually have a great attitude about this, and then their defense is just fantastic, and that is from Jalen Carter to Zach Bond to how they've covered when they've lost a linebacker and a quarterback and a cornerback in each of the last 2 weeks. I think that they can do this because I would say that while I don't want to doubt Jaden Daniels, I think all year he has shown us what he's been able to do, and it's extraordinarily impressive. And I expect Jaden Daniels to have a more productive game from scrimmage yards, not just passing yards, than Jalen Hurts this week. I also think that the Commanders have very specific strengths that if you can eliminate it, if you can have Jalen Carter blow up his pocket, well, you only have so many other things. The Eagles don't have one specific strength, and so it's harder. It's like you're playing whack-a-mole of, hey, it doesn't really matter if you get rid of this one because they have so many other options and they're not afraid to use them, even if it's unconventional.
Very fair, and I will say this. Like, the Eagles' defense since the end of September has had one bad game. One. You know who that came against? Jaden Daniels, who threw for 5 touchdowns.
You know whose quarterback had a concussion that game?
Yes, but that doesn't, I'm talking defense. I'm talking about giving up 36 points and 5 touchdowns to Jaden Daniels. Obviously not being able to control drives has something to do with that, but the Jaden Daniels, like, look, I hate quarterback-centric analysis of the NFL. I do. When people are just like, what team has a better quarterback? That's like, that's dumb to me, but with this Washington Commanders team, I kind of just throw up my hands and say, they got that dude. Like, they got that dude who's just simply going to be, even in a star-studded NFC Championship game, I think he's the best player on the field. I really do. Like, I'm sorry, Saquon, anybody else. Jaden Daniels is just different than everybody else. Like, we talk about, he's a 7th quarterback to be starting an NFC champion or a conference championship game. The other 6 all had a top-3 defense behind them. This Commanders defense is not that good. But the Jaden Daniels just keeps willing this team to victories. He's the best rookie quarterback I've ever seen. Apologies, C.J. Stroud, who only held that title for a year. He might be the best rookie, period, I've ever seen. Sorry, Randy Moss, but if he makes a Super Bowl, he kind of takes that title. And he is, I think, the best quarterback in the NFC already. We've never seen this from a rookie. And he's just that Michael Jordan-level competitor who's just willing his team far beyond what they should do.
I agree with everything you just said, except for one important piece. He's not the most important, or he's not the best player on the field in this game. The NFL MVP is playing in this game, and it's Saquon. Like, there's just no two ways about it. Even when the Rams knew, we all knew that the Rams had to do everything they could to stop the rushing attack. They were desperate. They loaded the box in every possible way they possibly could. And what's Saquon do? He ran for over 200 yards. Look at the two matchups this year. In the first matchup between these two teams, Saquon went for a 146. In the second matchup, even without his starting quarterback over the majority of the game, he still went for a 150. Like, even when they knew they didn't have to account for any sort of Jalen Hurts action here, he still went for 150 yards. Like, the most unstoppable player in the NFL playoffs is Saquon Barkley, and I don't know anybody that's going to slow him down. So to your point, I believe Jaden Daniels can move the ball. I believe that Jaden Daniels can have success. I don't believe Washington can stop Saquon, and the reason that Philly's going to the Super Bowl is because their rushing attack is flat out going to dominate this football game.
I think a couple of things. I think it's super important for us to look back at that Commanders-Eagles second game, but I think where we miss it is, yes, Jaden Daniels had 5 touchdowns and figured out how to win. Also, that team had 5 turnovers. Jaden Daniels had 2 interceptions, and his team had 3 fumbles. And so at some point, it's like, well, one of those has to give. And yes, Saquon Barkley had a lot of rushing yards in that game. He also had his big explosive one before Jalen Hurts got hurt, one of them. And so I think that we have to keep that in mind. I think as long as Jalen is mobile enough, which I do believe he is, like, yes, that safety right after he got hurt, he didn't look very mobile, but the rest of the game, he didn't look great, but I think he looked a little bit better. And Saquon did break off that massive touchdown at the end of the game after Jalen was injured. And that was the day of the injury, not a week later. I think to me also, when I look back at this and I say, hey, a couple of years ago, the 49ers were playing, I believe it was against the Green Bay Packers in the playoffs. And Jimmy Garoppolo had like 8 pass attempts and they won. And it was like, it doesn't even matter. Maybe it was their Vikings game before they played against the Packers. That might've been it. Maybe it was honestly both. Like, no,
Raheem Mostert 4 touchdowns, if I remember that.
Yeah, game. I was at that game. And so it's like, you kind of look at that and you say, you need the quarterback to get to the Super Bowl. Or do you? If you have everything else working around, as long as the quarterback doesn't mess it up and turn the ball over, you should be okay. And so what I would say is, if the Eagles are willing to really lean on their run game, and even if they're having Jalen throw stuff, like some of your throws, just so you mix up your looks and the expectations, should literally be like manufactured run game throws. The biggest issue they will have, though, is think about the Jalen Hurts to A.J. Brown end zone attempt that they had this past week where A.J. dropped it. And granted, it was snowing and they said they couldn't see the ball and all of that. If they try something like that, and there were a couple of throws he had like that, one of which was between 2 Rams defenders, if they try things like that, the Commanders are going to pick it off if they play like last week. And so I think that's where the Eagles have to be careful, is you should be conservative in this game plan, maybe have a couple explosives, but you really can't do too much because the Commanders are going to make you pay. And you have shown that your passing game is not in rhythm. It's not in sync.
It really isn't. And I do think the Eagles win this game. They're a better roster by far. I mean,
they're favored by 6. You're taking the points or no points?
I was going to say, the Jaden Daniels is going to put the fear of God into the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday, and he might pull off this upset. I'll take the points. I just think Jaden is that dude. I am convinced that he is going to be an absolute superstar for many, many, many years to come. And I am to the point where I don't want to bet against Jaden Daniels anymore. He's that good. He is. So the Eagles have the far, far better team. And I think the Commanders have the one X factor who can flip this game around and maybe even pull off the upset. Like, well, we weren't saying a week ago that the Commanders were going to beat the number one seed Detroit Lions,
right?
Were we? Like,
that's very fair.
But Jaden's that dude. And already is a rookie. I've never seen anything like it, but it's here and we have to acknowledge it. And that's why I'll take the Commanders +6, even though I do think the Eagles win a close game.
All right, Jory, what do you think?
I'm going with the Eagles. I think Jaden Daniels is going to light it up, and I think he's going to show us that for a lot of years to come, he is not a one-hit wonder. He has what it actually takes. But when it comes down to it, the Commanders have multiple roster holes, and they just lost right guard Sam Cosmi. And if you're telling me I'm playing against Jalen Carter, who blew up Matthew Stafford in a much better offensive line, and now Jalen Carter's coming for me, I think that's going to make Jaden Daniels' day difficult. And while he will be able to get over it some, it's just not going to be enough when you look at what Saquon can do and what that Eagles defense can do. So I'm taking the Eagles.
They're favored by 6. You think they win by more than 6?
I do.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with Jory on this one. I'm going to take the Eagles to win. I think it's a close game, but and 6 is a beefy number. But I think the Eagles turn around and get that, 7 to 10 point win when it's all said and done. We'll see how it played out. Frank, so far, we've been making a ton of money. Go ahead, Jory.
The last thing I'll note is, as much as I'm telling the Eagles to have a conservative game plan, they've had these games this year. Like Carolina was one where it was like they only could run, they couldn't pass. And then after a few weeks of that, all of a sudden they figure something out or they find some specific weakness in a defense and A.J. Brown goes off. So I don't think we can count that out, even though I would be nervous with the stakes to try that.
And let's not forget Jalen Hurts almost won MVP 2 years ago. He's not just a guy. Like, he is a very good quarterback. It's just right now, like you said before, it's just out of sync. It's just very, I don't know what's broken about the Eagles passing game, but it's not there. But they do obviously have the talent to get it going. And they might have to. I mean, at some point, if you're just going to play this conservative game, like you said, like don't take chances, just play conservative. What are you doing? You're letting Jaden Daniels maybe win that game in the last 2 minutes. You're keeping the game close. You're shortening the game. And I don't know that that's necessarily the best recipe for a highly favored Eagles team in here.
It's out of sync now, but maybe it gets in sync and then they say bye, bye, bye to Washington. That's the perfect way to end the show. Stone, thank you so much for making sure that we got the breaking news in the middle of it. He's the true MVP of this. He is definitely the Justin Timberlake and JC Chazé of this show. He is all of the lead singers. Follow us on social media. You know what to do. Rate, review, subscribe. Thanks for hanging out with us. We will see you on Friday.